Last night I met someone he used to know, I simply said, which reminded him that he hadn't scolded me for a while. But even as angry as he still was, I'd also gotten him to admit the pulley was invaluable. He thought it would only take a few pieces of wood and the rope to get it working. Fritz grabbed some old wooden slats from the same lot where I'd stolen the pulley and bundled them with our garden tools to carry them into the garden. Once it was safe to bring everything into the basement, he stood the two longest pieces of wood on their ends and attached them at the top with a third piece of wood. He built stands for the base and said I would have to anchor them with my weight while I pulled the bucket up, or else the whole thing would tip over on me.
I wish I could make it more permanent, he said.
But I think we should lay this down flat each night, so it doesn't draw any attention in case someone does peek in the windows. I attached the pulley at the top and ran the rope through it. The other end was already tied to the bucket beside me. When I pulled down on the rope, the bucket handle lifted up. Let's test it, I said, already anticipating how helpful this was going to be. Fritz climbed into the shelter, and I lowered the bucket beside him. He filled it with dirt and then told me to raise it up. Even though it was heavier than the buckets I usually hauled up the ladder, the pulley bore most of the weight and took less of my effort than before. I raised the bucket up to eye level, then dumped it on the basement floor beside me and lowered it again. Fritz and I worked this way until he announced all the extra dirt was gone from the shelter. He suggested he could go to work digging while I got rid of the dirt in the basement. So I did. I first lowered the pulley system, untied the bucket, and emptied the new dirt from the basement out into the garden patch. The work seemed much easier today, maybe because I wasn't already exhausted from hauling it up and down the ladder. Only an hour of work easily convinced me I had done the right thing by sneaking out to get the pulley. By midday, the extra dirt was mostly gone from the basement and spread out in the garden area. Fritz would have more dirt after lunch, but for now, I decided to work outside to make it look as if we were progressing in the garden. I was accustomed to the constant city noises in Berlin, but here, set off so far from any main roads, it was very quiet. So it was easy to detect the footsteps of someone arriving from the alley, the same way I had come when I first found this building. I took a quick glance back to be sure the boards were covering the window, though I already knew they were. Fritz and I were very careful to always remember that, and I knew he wouldn't come out unless he was sure nobody else was around. So I turned back to my work and tried not to appear too concerned. Any look of guilt or stress would certainly give me away. Because if my only purpose here was gardening, I was allowed to be here. But who I saw emerge from the alley confused me. It was Anna. Her mother was with her, carrying a basket covered with a cloth. "Mama thought she saw you working here," Anna said cheerfully. "After seeing you at the restaurant yesterday, we walked this way home and thought something looked different here." I stopped working and stared up at her while shielding my eyes from the sun at her back. She was smiling and acting as friendly as always, the same Anna as she had been before her brother's death. Or almost the same. Something seemed different, and I couldn't quite place it. It was like she was too friendly, working too hard to pretend everything was normal. It probably wasn't much different than I had acted on our last day of school together when I first told her about this garden. Maybe she felt as awkward as I did about repairing our friendship.
After Peter's accident, Frau Warner chose her words carefully.
Maybe she wanted everyone to believe that escaping one's country by hiding out in a specially designed car was an accident. Or more likely, that's how the Stasi had told her to describe it.
"You brought us some bread from your mother. That was so kind, and we never thanked her."
I sat back on my heels. My mother had to leave town to take care of my grandmother.
"Yes, I heard that."
Frau Warner casually looked around.
"We wondered if there's anything you and your brother might need while she's gone. Where is Fritz, by the way? I thought he was helping you garden."
"He had to run an errand," I said. "He might not be back for a while." She accepted my lie just as I had told it, without batting an eye.
"Ah, well, please tell him hello for me.
I know he and Peter were friends, and it would have been nice to see him, too. Is there some place I could set this basket? It has cheese and crackers and some homemade shortbread. I thought you might like that until your mother is home to cook again.
It all sounded delicious. So good, in fact, that I'd have snatched the basket off her arm and inhaled the food from my filthy fingers if I didn't think it would draw some unwanted attention my way. Instead, I pointed to a flattened rock near the pond. You could put it there, and thank you. The gratitude I felt could not be expressed enough with words. If only she knew how much the food meant to us. While her mother walked over with the basket, Anna crouched near me. I returned to working on some weeds, but that didn't stop her from talking. In a low voice, she said, "On the last day of school, when you sat by me at lunch, I know you were just trying to be nice, and I was horrible in response. I want you to know I'm sorry about that." I looked up. "I'm sorry, too, for not telling you about Peter's plans as soon as I heard. Maybe if I'd told you sooner, that wasn't your fault." Tears filled her eyes, but she blinked them away. "Mama thinks it would be good for me to get out of the apartment more. So if you'd like, I could come by sometime and help here in the garden." Actually, I didn't like the idea at all. But how could I refuse Anna's polite offer without raising suspicions? I smiled as kindly as I could manage. "It's hot and you'll get filthy and it's boring, but if you really want to..." "Thank you, Gerda!" She seemed genuinely happy about what little I had offered, which made me wish it could have been possible. "I know a lot about gardens, so I can be helpful, and we can fix some of your mistakes before you get the seeds planted." My eyes narrowed. What mistakes? Even in my fake garden, I felt slighted by her suggestion that I might have done a poor job. She chuckled. "Well, you can't just cover the weeds over with dirt, silly. I don't know where you got this dirt from, but it won't fix the problem for long. Pretty soon, the weeds will just pop up through the new dirt, stronger than ever." I didn't answer her. Instead, I glared, which I shouldn't have done. But she had no idea how hard I'd worked, and how important it was that I get rid of our extra dirt. If I couldn't figure out that problem, we would surely be caught. I wasn't angry at her, just frustrated with myself. But all I could do was let her walk away. After I was sure she and her mother had left, I made my way back inside the building where Fritz had been watching us.
"I heard it all,"
he said, even before I could say a word. "Maybe the next rainstorm will even the fresh dirt out with the old," I suggested.
"We got some rain last night and nothing improved,"
Fritz said.
"Whether we cover the weeds or bare ground, it still looks like fresh dirt. We can't use it out here anymore."
He was right. We would have to do the hard work of removing the weeds, which was bad enough, but the second problem was much harder. What would we do with all the extra dirt? Chapter 26. One today is better than 10 tomorrows. German proverb. The next day was a Sunday, which gave us some much-needed time at home to rest, bathe away at least 5 layers of caked-on dirt, and gulp down the food from Anna's mother as if we hadn't seen anything edible for weeks. The tunnel had made us both noticeably thinner, but we were also both more muscular in our arms and shoulders. While I liked feeling stronger, I also knew it was important for us to eat enough to avoid looking like we were in the process of starving. People had begun staring at us lately, and stares invited questions. Questions led to gossip, which surely ended up in the form of reports at Stasi headquarters. Fritz and I had chosen to dedicate the day to pleasing the hidden microphones. We talked about how grateful we were to have the allotment of land and how much we were learning about gardening. We spoke of missing our mother, but being proud of her for taking care of Oma Gertrude and not burdening the state. We discussed Fritz's enthusiasm to join the military at the end of the month, and my hopes to get more responsibility from the pioneers this fall. Maybe we laid it on a little thick. No doubt some of what we said brought groans from whoever was tasked with listening to us. But these conversations were only a game now. If there were any consequences for our overworked chatter, we didn't care. we wouldn't be around to face them. Fritz and I worked together to get the apartment cleaned up, but we were both delaying the worst job of all, the laundry. It had piled up over the last week and a half to something on the scale of a small mountain. Our clothes were dirty and smelly and so stiff with sweat that they practically held their shape after we had removed them. The sheets from our beds were even worse. It was bad enough now that I sometimes woke up in the morning with new dirt on my face from having slept on it in the night. "We have to wash these," I said. "But if we hang them up now, they won't be dry by bedtime. And once we return from the garden tomorrow, they'll only get dirty again."
"It's too bad the washing can't get done for us while we're gardening."
"Yeah, we..." Then I stopped as an idea snapped in my head, like someone had flipped on a light. Suddenly, I knew exactly how we'd get rid of the dirt. I looked over at Fritz and saw a mischievous gleam in his eyes. We had the same solution in mind, I was sure of it.
"The pond next to the garden," Fritz said.
I grinned. That was exactly my idea. On our way to the welcome building the next morning, Fritz and I stopped by a lumber shop for more wood and rope and a handful of nails, all for a clothesline. It would take much of the day to build, but it was absolutely worth it. While Fritz nailed the wood together to make two tall tees, I dug two deep holes in the ground, about 10 meters apart. We chose the spot carefully, exactly parallel to the Berlin Wall and in front of the pond. Then we set the posts into the ground and filled it back in with dirt. Our posts weren't quite straight, and Fritz said they'd probably tip over in the next big wind, but I thought they were good enough for our purposes. We ran rope between them. It sagged a little, and the longer fabrics might brush against the dirt, but that was fine by me. It was time for a test. I carried a bucket of dirt from the building with a single bedsheet on top. If the guards were watching, they'd see me wash that sheet in the pond, then hang it on the clothesline to dry. With the sheet blocking their view, I would then empty the dirt into the pond, then back to the building for another load of dirt and another sheet to be washed. With the second sheet on the clothesline, I had even better cover from the guards. There was plenty of laundry to be done and endless loads of dirt to be emptied. Fritz and I worked that way throughout the week. By the end of the week, he was 10 meters in, but we were also slowing down. It took time to walk the piles of dirt from so deep within the tunnel back out into the air raid shelter, and it took me more time to empty the dirt because now I had to sneak the dirt out from the building and get it to the pond, then wash and hang the sheets on those trips. And we both had to put in time on the garden because it was almost certain that at some point, someone would drive by to check on us. Fritz and I began working longer hours, arriving as early as possible in the mornings and staying as late as we could at night. We were barely sleeping, eating as little as we could to get by, and working, always working. Occasionally on our trips to the welcome building, we walked past the platform where I had seen Dominic and Papa, but they were never there anymore. I wished they were. I wanted to let them know we were digging, as Papa wanted. I tried to remain patient, though, and keep focused on the fact that at least we were moving deeper each day. The problem was, as Fritz pointed out, that his 18th birthday was coming up soon, exactly 3 weeks from now. That was our absolute deadline to be finished. We weren't sure how much farther we had to dig, but it was a long way. Nor could we just walk away if we didn't finish in time. The tunnel had progressed far enough that eventually it would be discovered. And when the Grenzers found it, figuring out who had dug it would be the simplest of mysteries.
"If we don't finish, we need a backup plan for escape," Fritz said. "The second we began digging this tunnel, we committed ourselves to leaving, one way or another."
"We're not swimming the Spree," I said. That had been a bad idea weeks ago, and it was no better now. Fritz gritted his teeth.
"We can tie ourselves together with a rope so we can help each other against the current."
"All the easier for one of us to pull the other underwater. And what about Mama? We're not leaving her behind."
then what's our backup plan?
Fritz wasn't as angry as he sounded.
It was only the same frustration as I felt, too.
Everything else is far more dangerous. We can't jump over the wall. Three of us can't be smuggled across the border at once, and we know how that idea ended for Peter, so what do we do?
I stood up and dipped the bucket in the dirt again to carry more of it outside. We'll finish this tunnel, Fritz. We'll finish this tunnel as if our lives depend on it, because now they do. By the beginning of our third week of digging, we had washed every sheet in the apartment at least 10 times. And since the pond was constantly being flushed with dirt, the water was hardly clean. The sheets looked worse and worse with each washing. I figured that was good news. It gave me an excuse to pull them down and wash them again, along with more hidden dirt from my bucket, of course. If my mother saw these sheets, which were now only white in the past tense, she would be horrified. But I couldn't have been happier with their lack of progress. Chapter 27. Forget not the tyranny of this wall, horrid place, nor the love of freedom that made it fall. Written on the Berlin Wall after it came down. A small package arrived the next morning from the post. It was labeled for me and had a return address and writing on it that I didn't recognize. The package was marked as seeds.
"Who'd be sending us seeds?" Fritz asked.
The package had been opened already and the Stasi inspection stamp was on the outside. But it didn't look like they had gone through it with anything more than a cursory examination. 7 envelopes of seeds were inside, all of them for squash.
Squash?
Fritz wrinkled his nose.
Who would ever want so much squash?
Papa would, I replied. It was his favorite vegetable. Fritz sat beside me.
Did this package come from...
Then he remembered we were bugged and changed his question.
From anyone we know?
For the benefit of the microphones, I said, I sent away for some seeds to help with the garden. Then I poured the envelopes out on the table. Fritz and I tore open each one, but they contained only seeds. I felt beyond disappointed. Surely this package had come from my father, but I had expected more from him. When I said we needed money to help with gardening, he should have read more into that note. We didn't need seeds, and certainly not this many seeds for squash. Or worse, maybe he did send money, and the Stasi had inspected it straight out of my package. Frustrated, I picked up the wrapping to crumple it up for the garbage, and then heard something rattle inside. I opened it again and saw one more package of seeds that was stuck in the seal. I pulled it out and made some comment about it being even more stupid squash seeds. But this envelope was different. It still rattled with the seeds inside, but not as easily, and it was thicker than the others. I opened it and saw it stuffed with Ostmarks. I wasn't sure how much was in there, but probably more than we would spend in a month. My eyes filled with tears, and Fritz's too, but he shook them away and in a cheery voice said,
Well, I suppose we're planting squash then. That was smart, Goethe, to write and ask for those seeds. By late fall, we'll have plenty of food for as many people as might want it.
As we walked to the welcome building that morning, Fritz and I discussed what we should do with the money. I wanted to buy enough food to stock our cupboards again, but Fritz felt we ought to have a wheelbarrow to haul dirt.
The buckets don't carry enough dirt with each load, and it takes too many trips in and out of the building, which is dangerous. A wheelbarrow would be better.
Papa sent that money for food, I protested. We were living on so little these days that lately my hunger won out in any argument.
No, he sent that money for us, and we need a wheelbarrow more than we need cheese and sausages.
I disagreed. I'd have rather bought 100 fat sausages with it, or better yet, a fine yellow banana from the black market. I carried my hunger everywhere with me, even into my dreams lately. Mama had said there was a lot of starvation at the end of the Second World War, but I never really understood what that meant. Not until the last few days. Now, every time my stomach rumbled and I had nothing to comfort it, I understood why she always worried about having enough food. In the end, Fritz won the argument, and we bought a small wheelbarrow on our way there. I'd have still rather had the banana. At least it made hauling the dirt easier. While he dug, I used the bucket to empty dirt from the basement into the wheelbarrow outside, all blocked from the view of the watchtower. Then I put another sheet on top and walked it over to the pond. With fewer trips, I was removing far more dirt than ever before. For much of the day, though, Fritz weeded and planted papa seeds while I continued removing dirt. It slowed down our work in the tunnel, but if the guards were watching from their tower, they needed to see progress in this garden every day. Late that afternoon, I was on my way to the pond with another load of dirt, covered over with two sheets from my bed, when a green Trabant Kubel with the words Volkspolizei drove up. Two police officers were inside. I froze in place while Fritz's head shot up and he jumped to his feet. I looked at him. Should we run for it? Where would we possibly go?
Keep working.
Fritz's voice was terse.
Wait until they're not looking and then empty the wheelbarrow, but let them see you wash the sheets. Just pretend that everything is normal. We're gardening. That's all.
I put my head down and continued walking toward the pond. I suddenly felt exposed, like spotlights were pointing down at me, revealing to the world every secret I'd ever tried to hide. The secret right in front of me. Why did a girl need a wheelbarrow to haul only two sheets? Why did her muscles strain if the load was only lightweight cotton? Why did she insist on cleaning in a pond that sent the sheets out dirtier than when they went in? The two officers left their car fully armed and surveyed the lot like they already knew we were up to something. Truly, how could they miss the glaring signs of what we were really doing here? For as careful as we thought we had been, it all looked so obvious to me now. Fritz hailed the officers and walked out to meet them as far from the pond as possible. He invited them over to inspect our garden patch and brought them with him to the opposite side of the clothesline, leaving me free to quickly dump the wheelbarrow full of dirt. It plopped into the water far too loudly, and soon I heard the footsteps of one of the officers coming my way.
Guten Tag.
I saw white blonde hair and immediately recognized the officer as the one who had put his rifle against my cheek several weeks ago. Mueller. That same rifle was still slung over his shoulder, but he also carried a sidearm pistol on his right hip. He had frightened me then, and much as I wanted to hide my fear this time, my legs were already shaking. Guten Tag, I answered. My tone wasn't rude, but it wasn't friendly either.
I know you,
he said.
You're the girl who watches the wall on her way to school.
It's hard to miss the wall, sir. He chuckled, but for only a brief moment.
Perhaps. But there are some who glance at the wall and others who seem to study it.
I had no way to answer that, and I panicked for a moment. My eyes darted over to Fritz, wishing he were here to help me. But Officer Mueller didn't seem to notice and only turned to face the garden.
We came to have a look at your Schrebergarten, to see your progress on this land.
We planted squash and corn this week, I said.
June is too late for planting. Nothing will grow by the time the frost returns.
It took us longer than we thought to clear the ground, sir. I kept my head down, always at work washing the sheet in my hands.
Yes, we expected to see more than this.
Mueller started to walk away, and I leapt from the pond to follow him. Fritz was already showing the other officer around the field, but there wasn't much to see. I worried that Mueller might get bored and wander to investigate the building. The window we used to get inside was closed and looked as if it was nailed up just like the others. But of course it wasn't. A firm push would open it and reveal our two-faced plan. Are you a gardener? I asked, following behind him. Maybe you can give us some advice.
How long do you spend in this garden each day?
He ignored my question, which meant he had no interest in polite conversation, and he was walking directly toward the welcome building. It varies. Often in the heat of the day, we rest in the shade.
You are working this ground on behalf of the state, not for your own pleasure,
Mueller said.
If you are uncomfortable on warm days, we can find others who want the work.
The state isn't paying us to be here, sir, I said, only allowing us the use of the land. He turned to me.
The state does not need to pay you. You will expect some of this harvest, I assume? That is your pay.
I lowered my head and held a tone of humility. Yes, sir. I'd have thrown in 100 more sirs if it helped. When Mueller marched on, still walking toward the building, I glanced back at Fritz for assistance. What was I supposed to do if Mueller tried to get inside? But Fritz couldn't do anything to help. He was showing the other officer our permit for the land and answering whatever questions came at him. It was up to me to keep Mueller away from the building. But how could I? Mueller wasn't tall enough to see into the long upper windows, and like Fritz, he had to crouch to be low enough for the 3 windows at ground level. He stopped at the first window, one that was actually boarded up at least. He pulled out his flashlight and shone it through the cracks in the wood. Luckily, Fritz had filled in the largest gaps with extra wood, and I had gotten rid of most of the dirt that had been in there. The metal door for the air raid shelter was closed and covered in a scuff of dirt, so he shouldn't be able to see it, and Fritz's pulley system was laid on its end in the far corner of the room. With only a flashlight, I doubted Mueller could see anything more than some fallen boards.
"Do you ever go in here?"
Mueller asked me. "It doesn't look safe to enter," I said. "The building is old and probably was bombed at one point. It looks like the whole thing might collapse soon." Actually, I didn't worry a bit about that happening, but I hoped he would believe it might collapse on him and decide to stay out.
"Are there any doors to get inside?"
I shrugged. "We're at the back of the building. The front would be on the other side of that wall. Perhaps you could access a door there, if you're allowed."
"Of course I'm allowed," he snapped. "But the entrance on that end is bricked over. What is your name?"
If I thought there was any chance to get away with it, I'd have lied to him. But it was too easy to check my story. "Goethe Lowe, sir. I'm 12 years old and live about 5 blocks away with my mother and brother."
"Does your mother approve of your gardening?"
"She doesn't know. She's out of town caring for my grandmother. We hoped to make this garden a surprise for when she comes home." He arched an eyebrow.
"Goethe Lowe. Is your father Aldis Lowe? I've seen his file."
I hesitated. What else could I do but answer? "Yes, sir, but he lives in the West. We have no contact with him anymore." As soon as I said it, I could have kicked myself for that lie. Only that morning we had received Papa's package. If Mueller checked my story, he would return with more questions. Or more officers.
"Your father did not believe in communism. He felt that it was only a matter of time before the GDR collapsed."
"You'd have to ask my father about his beliefs, sir. I was very young when he left." Except, of course, that he had taught me everything he believed. Mueller stared down at me, and I felt like squirming beneath his gaze.
"Only 12 years old? You seem older."
"With my father in the West and my mother at work or with my grandmother, I've had to grow up fast." Mueller's attention returned to the building.
"So is there a way inside here or not?"
My eye flicked to the window we used, but I quickly looked anywhere else. "We wouldn't know, sir." Mueller walked down and leaned over to tap on the middle window. Then he took another step toward the third window, the one that Fritz and I used. Once he pushed it, he would know. He would see what we were doing, and if I tried to stop him, that would only make things worse. I could try to run, but wouldn't get more than a few steps away before he'd draw his gun.
"Officer Mueller,"
his companion called.
"We just got a call to investigate something farther down. It's probably a bird caught in the wires again, but we need to check it out." "Yes, sir,"
Mueller called back. "I hope the next time you come, we'll have corn and squash to offer you." He must have detected the fake cheerfulness in my voice. Mueller stared at me again. Was my face as flush as it felt? I could hardly keep 2 thoughts together, and there was so much sweat on my palms that if I brushed them against my clothes, I knew it would leave marks. He frowned at me, then walked on and tapped at the third window with the butt of his rifle. Mueller had pushed the side of the window with the hinges attached. It knocked the boards open only by a hair, but they did open, and I was sure if I noticed, he must have too.
"Officer Mueller!"
his companion called again, more sternly this time. If Mueller had crouched here like he did for the others, he might have seen the boards separate from the wall. But instead, he told me to stay ready, the slogan for all young people, and walked away. A minute later, his vehicle vanished down the road. I collapsed onto the dirt, so full of fear that I could scarcely breathe. Fritz came over and knelt beside me.
"Are you all right?"
"No!" I was fighting back hysterics. "He was right here, Fritz! Another second! One more step!"
"Just breathe."
Fritz put a hand on my back and rubbed it.
"Take some breaths, Goethe. We're all right."
But I still couldn't get enough air. All I wanted was to yell loud enough to get the fear out of my body. He had to know something was wrong. Our story doesn't make sense. There are too many holes, too much that doesn't come together.
But they did believe it, and they did go away. We knew they'd come at some point, and now they're gone. It's over.
It's not over, Fritz. Down to my bones, I knew it wasn't over. There would be more visits and more questions. Harder questions designed to trap us. Ones we couldn't answer. This would never be over. Chapter 28. Shut your mouth, then no mosquito flies into it. German proverb. Fritz and I spent the following morning in the tunnel. He had hit more rock, but he didn't want to move sideways again.
"I worry that we're tunneling at an angle," he said. "If we don't stay straight, we'll cost ourselves weeks of extra work."
So we dug out what rock we could and made the path only as wide as it absolutely had to be for a body to squeeze through. I thought about Mama here, whether she would feel comfortable in such a closed-off area. Fritz and I were used to it, but when we brought her down here, she might not like the feeling of being in a dark and narrow tunnel so far below ground. After several hours' work, we got past the rock, and Fritz helped me haul what he had removed to the surface. I was reluctant to use the wheelbarrow again. It had been such a close call with Officer Mueller yesterday, but I wouldn't be able to get the rocks outside otherwise. I was on my way to the pond with a load of middle-sized rocks and some dirt, all covered over with one of Mama's sheets, when I stopped. Another visitor was coming. Anna. She was alone today and wore capri pants with a sturdy button-down shirt. Gardening clothes. Even her brown boots were different from her usual pair. In one hand was a basket that I knew must contain a day's supply of food and water, and in her other hand was a small shovel. I quietly groaned and set the wheelbarrow down.
"Guten Tag," she called to me. "It looks like you've already had another hard day of work."
"We have," I said. "We're probably going to quit for the day, in fact."
"We?" Anna looked around. "Where is Fritz today?"
Her voice turned skeptical. "Another errand?"
"Yes."
I knew that didn't reflect well on Fritz, but what choice did I have? Anna pressed her eyebrows together.
"He leaves the hard work for you too often. I don't usually see him working here, only you."
My mouth suddenly went dry, so much that I had trouble speaking.
"You've been watching us?"
She laughed, with no idea of how serious my question had been.
"Only when passing by the alley, that's all. Anyway, I told you I would come to help, and my mother said I could stay as long as I wanted. I'm looking forward to it."
Her eyes darted to the clothesline.
"You started doing your laundry here too? That's odd."
"We have running water and room to hang the clothes when they're cleaned. It's better than our washer back at home." Anna walked with me over to the sheets to inspect them better.
"Are you sure about that? I don't mean to be rude, Goethe. I know you're doing your best with your mother gone, but these aren't that clean."
"I am doing my best," I said defensively. She wasn't being unkind. It's just that she had no idea of how tired I was, how hungry I was, and how frightened I was every minute of the day that we would be discovered.
If I were any more tired or hungry or afraid, I would spend every waking minute crying and every moment of sleep racked by nightmares. But as it was, my senses were constantly on alert while we were here, and I fell into such deep sleeps at night that I couldn't remember if I still dreamed anymore. I'm sorry, Anna said. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. I came to help, really. And I can pull weeds or water the plants or help you with the wash, whatever you want. I brought food we can share, even enough for Fritz if he returns. And I thought we could talk and catch up. I tried not to look as sad as I felt while I stared at her. Of course I wanted our friendship back. I missed her as much as I missed my parents and Dominic. In some ways, maybe more, because up until a couple of months ago, she had known me better than almost anyone in the world. And it would have been wonderful to have her company here through the long afternoons. Except for the times I was down in the tunnel with Fritz, or he was up here with me. This was lonely work. But it was impossible to allow Anna to stay. Fritz couldn't leave the building while she was here, and I wouldn't be able to empty the dirt or even touch the wheelbarrow right behind me. The first thing she'd try to do if I accepted her help would be to peel off the sheet from the wheelbarrow to wash it, and then she'd see what a fraud the entire clothesline really was. I appreciate your offer, but Fritz and I want to do this by ourselves. I had to be firm, but tried to be polite as well. More than ever before, I still wanted her as a friend. Oh, I did hurt your feelings, Anna frowned. I truly am sorry. The laundry is fine, Goethe. It's hard to do so much on your own. I'm not on my own, I said. I have my brother with me, and my mother will be home soon. Thank you for asking, but we don't need help. I swallowed hard and added, we don't want it. I'm trying to get our friendship back. Anna's face flushed as if she were holding back tears. I'm trying, Goethe. But my face had turned to stone, just as hers used to do. It's too late for that. Oh, all right. Anna's eyes darted around as if she wasn't sure what to do next. I had never been so rude, and even if I'd punched her, I couldn't have hurt her worse. She lowered her head and backed off the lot. Well, goodbye, then. I stood in place until she disappeared down the alley. Only when I was sure I was alone did I wheel the dirt and sheet to the pond and start the wash again. This time I needed more privacy than ever from the road and from the watchtower and even from Fritz, because I was certain I had just lost a friend forever, and the sadness of that was more than I could bear. Chapter 29. Lost goods, lost something. Lost honor, lost much. Lost courage, lost all. German proverb. I spent the early evening back in the tunnel with Fritz. After clearing through the rock, he had made good progress that afternoon.
It's to the point where we have to know how much farther to go, Fritz said. You need to get into Anna's apartment and look at the death strip.
I had already told him about her visit that afternoon. If only I could go back and redo that moment in a smarter, kinder way. She won't let me in, I said. Not now.
You have to get inside, he insisted. There is nothing more important with this tunnel than knowing when it's safe to go to the surface. If we come up too early, we'll be in the death strip. And if we tunnel longer than necessary, we might run out of time or get caught.
I'll find a way. Somehow. I exhaled a harsh breath as dread began to fill me. It was bad enough for me to use our friendship for such a dangerous reason. But the friendship was obviously over, and getting into her apartment now would be a product of lies and manipulation. On the few nights when I didn't crash into my bed asleep, I prayed that God would forgive me for all the lies I'd had to tell on our path to freedom. Fritz said he didn't pray for forgiveness because he didn't consider those lies a sin. He believed it was wrong to lie, but not as wrong as keeping us trapped behind a concrete wall. He said that instead, he prayed for all those people who were forced to serve a country they didn't believe in. Good people who held guns against us through no fault of their own. What about the people who want to hold those guns? I asked.
I don't pray for them, he said. I can't.
And I decided in that very same moment that I would. Somebody had to.
Not long before we intended to quit for the evening, Fritz began using the shovel as a wedge to pry out a rock lodged deep into the dirt. We pressed down on the handle together, but the rock was more embedded than we had expected, and now he had pushed the blade so far into the dirt that it was stuck too. Neither would budge.
"Let go,"
Fritz said.
"Let me try something."
He grabbed the handle with both hands, then jumped in the air and let his full weight come down on the wood. Something cracked, and Fritz fell to the ground.
"No!"
Fritz leapt to his feet again with the broken shovel in his hands. I aimed our flashlight at the rock, and sure enough, the splinters from the other end of the handle stuck out of the earth like a porcupine's quills.
"We can get another shovel," I said. "They'll have others at the store."
"Shovels are expensive, Goethe."
He ran a hand through his hair, then kicked at the wall.
"It'll take the rest of the money from Papa."
But it couldn't. We had agreed the rest of the money would be for groceries. In fact, we were quitting early tonight to buy them on our way home. I had spent half the day creating a shopping list in my mind. We'd have bread and sausages and potatoes and maybe a chocolate or two. Even cabbage sounded good. He wiped his sweaty hair from his face.
"We have to make a choice. It's either the food or another shovel."
"Isn't there one we could borrow?" I asked. "There were other shovels in the storage beneath our apartments. Someone will loan one to us."
"Once we're gone, the Stasi will look at everyone who might have been involved. If we borrow someone's shovel, the Stasi will say they helped us escape."
"What if we steal one?" I spoke the words quietly, almost hoping he wouldn't hear them. But he did. He turned to me with his eyes wide.
"Are you suggesting that, Goethe?"
I had stolen the pulley, though I didn't really consider that a crime since it clearly hadn't been used in years and didn't appear to belong to anyone. But to steal a shovel from our own building, that was different. It was wrong, and I knew it. The question was whether I could live with it. "How many laws have we broken already?" I asked him. "We've lied to the state and to the police and to nearly everyone we've spoken to in the last month. You said yourself that isn't wrong, not for this tunnel. We accepted the hand tools and seeds to work on a garden we have no intention of harvesting. Worst of all, we are right now sitting directly below the death strip. What does a stolen shovel matter at this point?" Fritz shrugged.
"I suppose it matters to the person who owns it."
I leaned against the wall and listened to the growl of my stomach. If we used the last of our money to buy a shovel, starvation was becoming a very real possibility.
"Some of what the state teaches is important,"
Fritz said tiredly.
"We do have a responsibility to be good citizens, even if we are rebelling against some of their laws, maybe even their biggest law right now. That doesn't mean we can rebel against everything that is right. They are also telling the truth when they say there are people in the West who will take advantage of others for their own profit. Some people use capitalism to help themselves and let the rest suffer for it. I guess what I'm asking, Goethe, is if that's who you want to be when we're free. Are you willing to sacrifice other people if it means you can get ahead?"
I closed my eyes and let only a single tear escape the corner. "No," I mumbled. "No, of course not." So we wouldn't steal the shovel, and the rest of Papa's money would buy a new one, and we'd pray that it held together until the tunnel was completed. I was still hungry, though. Really hungry. I just didn't say it. There we sat for some time, mourning the loss of the shovel and collecting our strength to go home to an empty apartment with empty cupboards. Filthy, exhausted, and alone. No, not alone. Footsteps had just landed on the floor of the air raid shelter, I was sure of it. Fritz had heard it too. We got to our feet and he pressed me behind him, then held out the broken shovel handle as a weapon. Whoever was on the other end had a flashlight. We saw glimpses of the light as it bounced from one wall to another. Then it turned in our direction and the footsteps came toward us. I didn't move. I didn't breathe. We both already knew that Fritz's broken handle was useless against the weapons likely headed our way. Then the light rounded a bend in the tunnel, and a man's voice ordered us to raise our hands and to drop the stick. His light shone directly in our faces, preventing us from seeing who he was. But it didn't matter. I recognized the voice from yesterday.
So, the Low children are doing something far more than gardening.
Officer Mueller lowered his flashlight, allowing us to see his face, cast in hard angles of light and dark shadow. In his other hand, a glint of metal was reflected. His gun.
Even this far below ground? I'm sure you know where you are right now.
The Death Strip. Chapter 30. Caught together, hanged together. German proverb. It felt like hours before any of us spoke. Mueller took his time investigating the tunnel, running his hands along the sides and poking at the ceiling to check how solid it was above us. A part of me hoped the ceiling would collapse directly above him, but of course that meant we'd be trapped too, and the Death Strip would cave in on all of us. Not much of a solution.
You've gone a long way,
Mueller said.
Farther than I expected.
You knew we were tunneling? Fritz asked. How?
I knew there was a reason your sister didn't want me getting close to this building. But I didn't really become suspicious until I looked inside the basement yesterday. I saw the pulley and the bucket and asked myself why so much fresh dirt might be in a building that is supposed to be closed up.
I could have kicked myself, or preferably kicked him. I knew he'd gotten close to the windows, but never thought he'd seen so much. In hindsight, that was plain stupidity on my part, just childish optimism in the face of reality. Mueller ordered us out of the tunnel, but told us not to climb the ladder up to the surface. Fritz dropped the shovel handle, then walked first with his hands held high, and I followed. Mueller went last, keeping the gun trained on us. If he shot, I hoped he would get me first. Maybe that was selfish, but I didn't want to go through watching it happen to Fritz, knowing I was next. Once we were in the shelter, Mueller ordered us to sit on the small bench. He stood behind the ladder, and here, under a little more light, I saw the gun all too well.
No trial is required before I shoot you,
he said.
You are clearly guilty of attempting to leave the country.
Yes, we were. Not even the best told lie could get us out of this one.
I was first alerted to you by a woman who lives in your building, Frau Eberhardt. Do you know her?
I knew her, and suddenly loathed her just as much as I did Officer Mueller. Maybe that was unfair. The Stasi would give her much-needed rewards in exchange for information, and after all, she was on the right side of the law, not us. But still, she had betrayed us, and nothing was so low as that.
Frau Eberhardt says she first noticed your odd behavior in the week before school got out. Is that how long you've been tunneling?
Yes, sir. There was no point in denying that.
And how long until you expected to cross into the West?
There's no way to know, Fritz said. We're not sure how much farther we have to go, or what conditions we might encounter along the way.
You're not the first to attempt an escape through tunnels,
Mueller said.
Why did you think you would succeed when nearly all attempts have failed?
We didn't know if we'd get across, I said. We only knew that we had to try.
But now with two shots of my gun, you will be nothing but failed escapees. Your bodies will be buried in shame. Your mother will be arrested and likely jailed. And your names will be published in every newspaper and throughout all history as traitors and cowards.
We're neither, sir.
Fritz held his head up, clearly determined that if Mueller was going to shoot us, it wouldn't be with us acting ashamed for what we had done.
Our country is Germany, one country that should be reunited. We don't belong to Moscow or to the West. We belong to ourselves, and I have never betrayed that. This tunnel has taken every ounce of courage we have. We are not cowards.
That seemed to entertain Mueller.
And so how would you have yourselves described? As heroes? Are you role models to other young people who are living behind the wall?
We're a brother and sister who only want a chance for a better life, Fritz said.
And to bring our family back together, I added. Please let us go. Forget you've seen us here.
I am a uniformed officer of the state, and could no sooner forget that tunnel than forget my own name.
His attention wandered upstairs as a gust of wind blew through the boards in the basement. It provided enough of a distraction that I wondered if Fritz and I could rush at him and overcome him, and then, well, I didn't know what. We weren't murderers, and we couldn't hold him here. We didn't even have enough money to offer him a respectable bribe. But we did have a tunnel. Mueller wore a gold wedding band on his left hand. He had a wife. On his left shoulder there was a small milk stain. From a burping baby, perhaps? He looked down into the tunnel again.
Who else is coming with you?
No one, I said. Half of East Germany could be lined up to come with us, and I'd still deny it. I wouldn't rat them out the way Frau Eberhardt had done to us.
What if others wanted to come?
Beside me, Fritz looked confused, perhaps wondering if that was a trap to get us to reveal other names. But I didn't think so. They'd be welcome, I said. You could...
No, I couldn't!
But from the tone of his voice, I knew Mueller had already thought about it, maybe even before he came here. That's why he'd come alone. His eyes flicked back to the tunnel, then over to me.
I'll go up the ladder first. You will follow next, and then your brother. If you try any tricks, I will bury you here.
He turned to leave, but I darted forward to grab his arm. Not to fight, but only to stop him from leaving. He reacted by shoving me to the ground and aiming his gun directly at me. I raised my hands in the air and closed my eyes, waiting for him to squeeze the trigger.
Would you die for this tunnel?
He yelled.
Risk your lives, your family, for a run to the vest?
Don't shoot her, Fritz answered. This was my idea, not hers. I opened my eyes again to protest, but still felt paralyzed in the sights of his gun. At least he hadn't fired it yet. With a trembling voice, I said, Bring your family and come with us. Bring them to the west. Mueller's eyes widened.
Escape? How dare you suggest?
There is more for your family in the west. It's the life you would want for them if you could choose. Fritz caught on to my idea.
You don't have to dig, but you might be able to keep other officers away from this area. Then when we're ready to leave, we can put out a signal, letting you know that the tunnel is completed.
Mueller wasn't convinced, but at least he was thinking.
My wife wants to go to America. She has family there.
We need another couple of weeks, Fritz said. Maybe more if we run into problems, but I can promise with all my honor to give you the chance to come.
For the first time, Mueller lowered his gun.
What's the signal, then?
I spoke up. We'll leave a shovel in the dirt outside, a sign that we no longer need it. A long silence followed. Mueller spent most of it staring into the tunnel, and I wondered if he was picturing himself and his family running to freedom. I'd done that myself plenty of times. Finally, he said,
I will write in my report that I investigated and saw nothing suspicious. But I may return tomorrow to arrest you.
I tried to catch Fritz's eye to see what we should do. Mueller's terms were terrible. At best, he would do nothing to help, and at worst, he would get us killed. What other choice did we have, though? We had nothing else to bargain with. Fritz reached out a hand to shake Mueller's. Irritating me even more, he thanked Mueller. He actually thanked him for agreeing not to kill us. Yet. Mueller turned to leave and